Out of Ottawa, Canada, that's the Soul Jazz Orchestra with People, People. It's from their 2008 album, Manifesto. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I apologize for starting a little later than we normally do. Gary had run a little longer than he thought he would, but this is the nature of the beast. Well, today, a story that is almost hard to believe because it continues, and the more it continues, the more unbelievable it sounds. I saw, as I perused the net, a man wearing a black T-shirt with white writing on it. It said, "Ask me about the Awan brothers." And I thought, what a great idea. So I called and I asked him about the Awan brothers, and it's a long, long story. On July the 24th, Imran Awan, a Pakistan-born owner of a U.S.-based IT business with dozens of clients in Congress, dozens of congressional accounts, many of them with a serious amount of security attached to them. He was about to board a flight back home, but instead was arrested by federal agents at Dulles International Airport on bank fraud charges and taken into custody. Awan and his wife, Hina Alvi, had falsified information on a bank loan for rental property and then wired the money to two people in Pakistan unrelated to the transaction, the federal complaint said. Thus began the most recent chapter, as it turns out, in a family business, and I use the word family advisedly, with a history of operating outside of the law. At the time of his arrest, Awan was the target of a federal investigation into double billing his congressional accounts, stealing government equipment, and hacking accounts of his clients, who included several congressional leaders. Who is Imran Awan? What exactly is his business? How did he get to be at the center of one of the nation's biggest and continuing scandals? And who is covering up for him? This was just an announcement, and within a short time, it fizzled. No more headlines, no more stories. George Webb is a citizen journalist. He says he's an accidental journalist, but it is, as it turns out, a very happy accident that he is a journalist, with Crowdsource the Truth. He joins us today to fill us in on that request that he had on his T-shirt. Ask me about the Awan brothers. And he says that this is a story that is part of a larger story that is justice sorted. And I'm so delighted that you can join us today. Thank you for being here on Lead Stories.
Thanks. Thank you, Eutrice. And, you know, it's no problem that the show went over because the speaker was a famous speech, and we had W.E.B. Du Bois in there. We had Marcus Garvey in there, and then the only thing we needed was Martin Luther King. Roll those three people into one, and you have Eutrice Lead. So it's a perfect lead-in.
Not nearly. But I thank your good feelings. Thank you so much.
Maybe
Coretta
Scott King, man. Yeah. So, it was, this is an honor, obviously. You are probably the standout person my son's a doctor in Harlem, and my son's a doctor in the Bronx, and he has many, many patients who remember the city sun and long for the city sun. He even though you were out of Brooklyn, they still said it was okay. Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry.
Yeah.
Can you
I'm
hear me?
You.
Yeah. Even though the City Sun came out of Brooklyn, they were okay. They accepted you in Manhattan, up in Harlem, and they still talk about you in the Bronx. So I just wanted to remind everybody.
Yeah, we were based citywide, and it really was a wonderful paper. I miss it too. And this is life. You move on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
what caused you to pose that request that we could ask you about the Awan brothers is because
sure.
you know them very well. How do you
yeah.
know the Awan brothers and who are they?
Well, I had actually started an investigation from a different article, a True Pundit article that was talking about Eric Braverman and the Clinton Foundation and a series of articles that came out about Huma Abedin's server. So I was kind of following that story, trying to find out where are these emails, because a lot of times when you get to the emails and WikiLeaks and so forth, you really kind of get to the truth, you know, rather than all these interpretations that you might get in mainstream media. And the Awan story broke with Fox. But as you said, it was kind of one of those flash in the pan stories where they said there's these three brothers in Congress. They're all making $160,000 a year. And at that time, I just thought, this is crazy. I wonder if these two things are connected. You know, I wonder if this server story with the Huma server is connected somehow to the Awan brothers, because they were IT guys. And I went into InsideGov, just like anybody else would go to InsideGov, and I looked, and sure enough, they were all making $160,000 a year. And then their two wives were also making $160,000 a year. And I didn't know a lot about Congress at that time, but I did know that the staffers typically only make $35,000 to $50,000, depending on your, I mean, you have to get to be almost the chief of staff level. I think a congressman only can make $160,000. So right off the bat, when I got introduced to the story, I was already running a daily YouTube series where I was kind of summarizing everything that was being said about the Huma server here in New York. And then I thought, well, I wonder if this same thing is going on in Virginia, in Washington, D.C. I wonder if the Awan brothers
want to put in here just one little thing to clarify who Huma Abedin is. And she is a chief of staff, if you will, the right-hand person of Hillary Clinton.
Yes, yes. And the reason I came up with this conclusion is because these emails are so valuable from the State Department. Different emails, and these Awan brothers work for different people in Congress who were kind of involved in the committees that interface with the State Department. The Intelligence Committee, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Homeland Security Committee, which has a lot of U.S.-based intelligence, and then the Foreign Affairs Committee, which a lot of times the State Department gets involved in trade negotiations and so forth. So it seemed like the Awan brothers had spent all their time focusing on State Department liaison positions with Congress. So I thought, well, maybe this is where the emails are coming from. Maybe this is where the emails are being hacked from, and then they're being forwarded onto the Clinton Foundation subscription to Wall Street firms or other people who could use this information in kind of a pay-to-play, different search firms that could somehow take advantage of this key information. So that was kind of what I started working on. And as I said, as you did in the lead-in, I was from the IT world. I was from selling software, and I worked in the web software, worked in databases, worked with network analysis and so forth. So I really hadn't had any training as a journalist. So I don't really, put a lot of stake in, the CNN kind of thing where one person will get up and say, hey, it's really blue, and then the other person says it's really red, and then we're all audiences looking at it, it's purple, and the audience is all trying to say, well, don't these guys know that this is purple, and what I call the metadata. You look at the actual data and then run the research program based on data, based on sources and citations of data, pictures, photographs, cell phone records, laptop records and so forth, addresses and so forth. So I started, when there was no follow-up on this Awan story, I started compiling doing business search records and so forth and home search records. And I found that they actually owned up to 12 homes and in the Washington, D.C., or in the Northern Virginia area, very close to Washington, D.C., just over the Potomac River. And which I thought, wow, this is funny for people coming here from another country. First of all, having three brothers in Congress making $150,000 and then two wives. Then there was a fourth one who's a chief administrative officer named Omar, who's also making $160,000 or $145,000. So that's odd enough that a family of six would be in Congress making that kind of money. That's the first thing. But the second thing that was kind of unusual was they had these 12 homes. Then I proceeded a little bit further and found that they actually had 22 different businesses. And that really, then I really started getting interested in saying, wait a minute, we've got satellite businesses, businesses that seem to be focused on satellite technology, other businesses that seem to be focused on biomedical type technology, a lot of home mortgage companies. And then there was these auto dealerships that they had. And I'm thinking, these people are really busy. They're doing all this for Congress. They're working for, each one of them is working for three different Congress people. They've got all these homes and they've got all these businesses. So what's really going on here? So I thought,
Let me ask you, were you able to determine the qualifications of these individuals for working in the business, or was that left up to the lead owner of the business to persuade Congress that the company, as a company, is capable of handling the business, and it went no further than that?
Well, actually, if you go to insidegov.com, and I don't know if these records are still there, but they were actually employees of the Congress. The chief administrative officer of the Congress, actually, now you're also correct that they were business owners doing work for the Congress at the same time, which is a clear, you know, ethical violation. But if you go to InsideGov, and I've taken lots of screenshots of this, they were actually employees of the Congress, as well as being contractors. And again, just go to InsideGov.com and do a search on AWAN, A-W-A-N. You'll see the six folks I'm talking about. So there are these congressional records, and I was never able to ascertain. I looked at their resumes. I looked at Imran's resume, for instance, his LinkedIn profile. It said he worked for a company called Lightbridge Communications. It said he worked for a company called Cellplan, just with one L, so C-E-L-P-L-A-N-E. All the stuff that they put on their resumes was very familiar to me in IT. They seem to be cell phone specialists, I mean, especially in the area of BlackBerries, so setting up these BlackBerry enterprise servers as well as, you know, setting up people in Congress with BlackBerries. Well, you know, you do digging, you do different searches and so forth, and I found a 2005 article talking where Imran Awan is quoted, I believe it's the New York Times, yeah, where he's talking about how setting up a person who's working with one of the Congress people and setting up with a BlackBerry and et cetera. So I was able to confirm with a lot of different sources that, yes, he's kind of a BlackBerry expert. And I thought, well, you know, if Huma had a BlackBerry, Hillary had a BlackBerry, Obama had kind of a stripped-down BlackBerry they gave him. Hillary wanted her special BlackBerries, you know, by Anthony Weiner's special team rather than having the NSA-approved BlackBerry. Joe Biden had a BlackBerry. You know, Hillary had a very strong relationship with the CEO of BlackBerry. You know, Kerry had a BlackBerry to negotiate the Iranian deal, Iranian nuclear deal. What's going on here? Biden had a BlackBerry for the Ukrainian, you know, pipeline deals. So I thought maybe what they're doing is using this BlackBerry as this kind of out-of-band communication and these private emails, these private email servers as this way of negotiating these kind of pay-for-play deals on the side, and they're using their regular state.gov or USCongress.gov emails for their regular business. So, and that investigation still is a part, still ongoing.
But regardless of who had BlackBerries and who did not, you were able to determine early on that it was most unusual, especially for people who are working for a company that is retained for services by the Congress, that people would be earning that level of a salary?
Almost across the board, that was an outlier. From any commentator, left or right, that seemed like a very odd red flag situation immediately, just even for one person, let alone being a person who might have started that job not being a U.S. citizen, which is very unusual. Now, Chuck Grassley, the senator from Iowa, and he's also the head of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, has sent a letter to the current acting head of Department of Homeland Security to ask how did they get their citizenship. It's been reported that Imran and his wife, Hina Alvi, did become citizens, and we don't know about the other two Awan brothers and the other wife, who's Ukrainian, Natalia Sova. But that is in process. We are going to be learning that from DHS. But that is really unusual. I've talked to people. You probably know Cynthia McKinney, and I've talked with her about it, and she said, you know, she's a three-time congresswoman from Georgia, Stone Mountain, Georgia. And she said that never happens. It's so hard for a Pakistani national to come to Congress and get a job to begin with because of the background checking and then the FBI interviews that need to be had to get the first job, let alone making $160,000 a year. So, I mean, I was never a congressman, but Cynthia was for three terms at least, I think. And so then I really got interested, like, whoa, are these kind of like maybe spies, you know, are these like a Pakistani spy ring that may be coming in? I really don't know the answer to that yet. But what was happening at the same time as this is this Russian narrative about, you know, Russian spying. And you know, at the beginning, you don't really know what to believe and a lot of heat going back and forth, not a lot of light or proof. But the funny thing about it was, I never saw any proof for the Russia spying, but every day another piece of evidence, metadata, would come in for this Pakistani spy ring kind of theory. And I finally decided to go to Washington myself and actually go to each home that they owned and knock on the door. And I found, I think, a relative at the first door I knocked on, and then I knocked on 10 more that seemed like they had renters in them, not any of the family. And then the 12th door I knocked on was this this Marine that answers the door. And his name is Andre Taggart, I found out later. And he's renting the home. And he says, yeah, I know Imran Awan. But he said his name was Alex, and he made me rent the home through his wife, Hina. He didn't want anything in his name. And that was $1.2 million house. It's a five-bedroom house, beautiful house. And this is a Marine, ex-Marine. He just had gotten out of the Marines, and he looked literally like he could put the flag in at Iwo Jima all by himself. I mean, he could be on the cover of of a Marine poster, this guy. So anyway, he tells me, he says, yeah, there was something really weird though. And I said, well, what's that? He goes, well, there was all this equipment in the back in the back of the house. I think, it was like the garage. And there's these Blackberries. There was these servers. Laptops, and then there was these hard drives and what looked like a printer router. And now what he told me the first time, this is April of 10th when I first discovered this, I said, well, anything unusual about those? He goes, the first time he said it was about 20 Blackberries. He said, yeah, there's government markings on these. We knew something was wrong with right away. These had government markings. I said, well, what did you do? He goes, well, I called the FBI. The FBI came out, then because my wife currently works for the Navy, she's Naval Intelligence, ONI. NCIS, which is the investigative arm for the Navy, came out and looked and made sure that she wasn't the leak. I mean, how do these Blackberries, these confidential classified Blackberries are used in the Congress as well as the Department of Defense and the State Department, is the most secure way of communicating, right? So that was a big security breach, and they wanted to ask her, hey, were you involved in this? And she said no, and they cleared her. And then finally the FBI said, well, we're going to bring in the Capitol Police to take possession of these Blackberries and laptop and the router. So that begins the whole saga of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, which is the next phase of the investigation.
Well, this is really interesting. You are a computer guy yourself.
Yeah.
A long career in IT. Mm-hmm. So you begin to put one and one together based on the pieces of information that are falling into place. And by the time you get to this house where you knocked on the front door and the Marine answers and tells you about these pieces of equipment that are in the back of the house, you're now beginning to think what?
Well, I'm beginning to think I found the big server. I'm beginning to think that this was the place where the BlackBerries were configured. These special BlackBerries, these quote-unquote secure BlackBerries, were being configured and then being given to members of Congress, which is what, you know, Imran was saying he was doing with these things. And I was reading these news articles coming out about this, you know, these burglaries that happened. There was 20 burglaries that happened. So there was something had gone wrong in January of this year. And there, for some reason, they had to clear out of the country really quick. And their stepmother, what had happened was the three of Juan brothers, their dad was getting ill and he was kind of dying, and they wanted him to sign over the inheritance to the brothers. Well, the stepmother was also living in one of their houses, one of these 12 houses. And the stepmother called the police and said, hey, these boys are actually imprisoning me. They've kidnapped me. They won't let me out of the house. They won't let me make any phone calls. When I do make phone calls, they listen in and know what I've said. Somehow they're hacking my cell phone. And the last time I did this, they threatened to kidnap my kids in Pakistan. That's a threat. That's a very serious threat. So I started reading this article, and this was released by Daily Caller by a guy named Luke Rosiak, who's really done some great reporting. And at the time I actually went to the house of the Marine, I was actually in communication with Luke saying, hey, Luke, I found them. I found the BlackBerries. I found the laptops. I found the router. You've got to call this guy. And it was about 9:30 at night. And I've got my text and I published it briefly. And then I took them down because I didn't want any extra attention on the family. But he waited till the next morning because it was late. He didn't want to call him that late. And then the next morning, the Marine had changed his mind. So, you know, I thought, hey, maybe I found the source of the emails, and then the destination was the Huma server in New York.
Now, when you said the server, you're now talking strictly about Hillary Clinton?
Well, Hillary had a server in Chappaqua, but then but then also Anthony Weiner had sort of a server or a laptop, but it had 650,000 emails on it. So somehow those emails got there, and there's two theories there. One is it's like Hillary says, it's yoga emails and wedding emails, and so there's two different cases going on. One case is to get the other 30,000 emails that Hillary hasn't released, so about 30 have and 30 haven't for her server. But then for the 650,000, hardly any emails have come out. I don't even know if any have from Huma's server, almost none. So the argument is, and the FBI has said they're going to take 5 years to put those 650,000 emails out. So the argument is, are they classified emails on that Huma server? Or a Huma and Anthony Weiner server, or are they just, you know, very mundane, emails about travel and what time should we pick you up and that kind of thing? So
let's take a little side. I want to just switch off a little bit just to recoup some of the information that you dropped earlier that I didn't have an opportunity to follow up on.
Yeah, sure.
So they have all these pieces of equipment stashed in this house, and you are wondering exactly what they are and what they're used for, but it's already established that Imran, who owns this company, actually. So he's both an employee of Congress and he is his own boss. He has a separate company. Mm-hmm. Isn't that not supposed to happen?
Yeah, it's clear conflict of interest. Clear.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And in this regard, since he's working this way, it's reasonable to assume that his employees, meaning his brothers and his sisters-in-law, are also basically accessible. They have access to the information that the company handles for Congress.
Yes, and they are also directly employed by the Congress, getting a check that says U.S. Congress on it as well, which would also be a conflict of interest, sure.
And they also, do you know if any of them has been vetted or cleared for handling this kind of information?
Well, Jackie Speer, who is a representative from the San Mateo area of California, the South Bay area in California, actually penned a letter along with Debbie Wasserman Schultz asking for top secret clearance of these five aides, but they don't name who the five aides are. Now, that could be the three brothers and the two wives, but it doesn't actually state that in the letter. So that's been pretty vehemently denied by Jackie Speer. But in terms of vetting, as far as a FBI interview and so forth, we really don't have that. Now, what we do have is Debbie Wasserman Schultz in two key video hearings. One, trying to get the server and BlackBerry's back from mainly the laptop. She's trying to get Imran's laptop back from the Capitol Police, the one that came from that house that I spoke about earlier, the Marine's house. That went to the Washington Capitol Police. And then even though the Capitol Police only do about a mile square in D.C., they're allowed to go retrieve equipment that is in the that belongs apparently to the a member of Congress, no matter where it is when the congressman's traveling. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz said, no, that's mine. You need to bring it back. You need to give it back. So there's this real standoff that you can see on the web between her demanding it and then, of course, Berta Rosa, who's the chief of police, is saying, no, it's a part of an investigation that's involving the FBI. And, it's a big investigation going on, leading me to believe that those aren't just yoga and wedding emails. There's something in those emails that's more than just weddings and yoga. So that's the first piece. And then there's a second video out there where she is questioning the people from three administrators, IT-type people, in the chief administrative office in the Congress. And those people are the people that give permissions to different employees and staffers. And she is blaming them for giving these staffers so much power and so much access to the different members of Congress. So she's the one who gives them the access, and then she blames the chief administrative officers, IT people, for giving the access, trying to kind of shift the blame to them. So that's kind of what's developed since then as the story moves along.
And being in this position, nobody knows at any given time who has access to the information, who is downloading, if that occurred, who is passing information along to any other entity. There's nobody really supervising Imran, his brothers, and his sisters-in-law in handling the information stored or connected with any of this equipment.
I believe that's true. There is one email in WikiLeaks which talks about someone trying to do a transfer of some kind at the DCCC. The DCCC is the fundraising arm for Congress. You know, when you run a campaign, you have to split. You can't run your campaign fundraising out of your congressional office. You have to have a separate office over at the DNC, and that runs where you get your money, and that's DCCC. So there is an email at the DCCC saying we need to do some kind of transfer. Does anyone have Debbie Wasserman Schultz's, or they say DWS, does anybody have DWS's password? And there's four different people on the email chain. One is her publicist. The other one is her chief of staff. The other two are people who manage her schedule. You know, all people you would think might have it if she was sharing that. And then the answer comes back, no, but Imran has her iPad and has her password. So Imran, it's right there in the email, has her password. So we don't know who's overseeing them. We don't know about the log files. I'm sure log files exist. But one thing we do know is Imran had access to everything Debbie Wasserman Schultz had access to, which is way more than just a congressman, way more than just a senator, because remember, she is the head of the DNC, which means she'd be able to see across all the different fundraising campaigns, not only for the congresspeople, but the senators, as well as the presidential campaign.
So the way you describe it, it's possible that if Imran or any of his brothers and his sisters-in-law wanted to, they could sell information. They can make information available to people who shouldn't have it. And that, too, could be part of their side business.
Yes. Are you ready for one more character in the Shakespearean play? The mother, Hina Alvi's mother, who's living there in Virginia, turns out to be a satellite expert. She is the interior minister of Bangladesh, where Cynthia McKinney is. She is one of the top world's imaging experts for satellite imaging. And she's written several seminal papers on digital processing from satellites. So now the plot thickens, because if you have access from NASA or advanced research, and there's these documents that are produced with these PDF documents as attachments, you know, you have attachments as emails, that could be extremely valuable information. They form a company, the Imran Awan and Saraya Begum, is her mother's name is Saraya Begum. Alvi's mother is Saraya Begum. They form a company between Imran Awan and Saraya Begum called NanoSET, NanoSET. Well, for people who are not familiar with the latest technology developments in satellites, satellites have been getting smaller and smaller to the point now where they're the size of 4-inch cubes, 4.3-inch cubes, something like that is a nanosat, so much so that they fire them up now in lots of 100, and they just let them burn up in the atmosphere as they fall into, they don't try to keep them up in geosynchronous orbit all the time. Those are called nanosats, right? Well, NanoSET, you know, is awfully close to NanoSat, and there's a conference every year, which is an intellectual property conference, where all these folks are from in Lahore, Pakistan, called NanoSET. So it's kind of a, you know, a think tank thing where a lot of investors meet with scientists and so forth. So there's a lot of potential. I'm not saying we have any proof at this point, but there's a lot of potential for pay-to-play and selling of secrets.
Well, my head is spinning, and yeah. I'm on the receiving end. I wonder what your head was doing when you were uncovering all these ties and all these hidden facts. So let's take a little rest and review here. I just want to keep track of what is unfolding before us.
Yeah.
You have a company whose origins are not really known because the company hasn't been really vetted. They happen to be functioning as a team, but they're all related. That too should trouble somebody. It's like a family invasion of the secret service of the secrets of the United States in a way. They have access to, because these are now their clients, highly and strategically placed members of Congress, and they are handling their accounts for them. You have pieces of equipment that are pried loose and are having lives of their own in a secret place where the people who were assigned to them don't have access to them. They turn up in a house that they owned as a family, but they were segregated. We don't know what for. Was it to come back to them periodically and update whatever it is they were doing? Was it downloading? Was it copying files and storing them elsewhere? We don't know what they were doing. They happen to have a series of companies that are related to the field. So it is quite possible that they were, you know, they were dabbling on two fronts. One as the contractors for the government and members of Congress, many of them in very highly sensitive positions, chairing different committees and so forth, and generating a level of information that ordinary people, including the tech people generally, would not have access to. But they show up in a house, in a suburban house, currently at the time, currently being occupied by a U.S. Marine.
That's right.
The grandmother, well, the mother of this family, has extensive experience in military applications for imaging and so forth. That is very valuable, and she's working closely with counterparts in Bangladesh. This tells me that what possibly might be happening here is that this is no ordinary firm. It wasn't placed there, didn't end up there by pure accident. And now my attention would turn to how did the lead guy, Imran Awan, and subsequently his relatives, how did they end up so well placed to do all kinds of things with respect to information technology, with respect to even military application? I mean, if you have imaging on that level, you're talking about a military application automatically. A person with those kinds of talents would be very, very helpful to governments, wherever they are, wanting to know what's going on in terms of planning, military planning. And maybe that's the background that she came with. And they're working both sides of the ocean and trading in information, i.e., if I want to put it bluntly, spying. It's a great environment for spying. Nobody is going to betray them because they're all related. Mm-hmm. And I've read some information about, you know, relating to this cause for arrest, which the government is very strategically calling. It was just for fraud, because apparently Imran obtained a loan under really false circumstances. And they're starting there. But I suspect, don't you, that there's more to come out of these strange things that are happening that also happen to coincide to make the brain think there's something else happening here. This is no ordinary family. This is a family that is up to something, and it's not good.
Yeah, you're right about that. I think there's a lot more to come. I have developed contacts in the campaign or in the House Judiciary Committee. And sometimes you get involved in these things, which are people don't want to come forward because they're scared of reprisals or blackmail and that sort of thing. So you never know if your sources are true or not. But what I've been told is there are going to be many loans by the U.S. Congressional Credit Union, not just the one for the $300,000. The transfer of the $300,000 in January, when the stepmother incident comes up, is just the last transfer in a whole series of transfers that have happened over time. And they are in the business of loaning or borrowing money against these 12 houses. And it looks like not only were loans made against the 12 houses originally, so there may be a total of 12 loans from the Congressional Credit Union, but then it looks like successively increasing value loans made. So we have no idea how many loans were made on this group of 12 homes. But that's certainly something that we need to look into. Now, if you're ready for one more slightly unbelievable fact, we can go there. But Hina Alvi, the wife of Imran Awad, we have a Hina Alvi that also works for a company called SuparCo. So it's SuparCo, SuparCo. And we have pictures of a Hina Alvi in a major Pakistani-American scientific group in Pakistan, the same time she's supposed to be working here for the U.S. Congress. Okay, so it may not be the same Hina Alvi whose mother is Saraya Begum, but SuparCo provides satellite imaging for OPEC countries, OPEC, Middle Eastern, African countries, as well as countries that, as exactly as you said, provide military and police, military police type applications. Okay. So now you have a real profit motive of reselling the technology because it can be resold to OPEC nations, can be resold to African nations, well, any nations that are not aligned really with Europe, NATO, and or the United States, the Five Eyes nations. So that's that we're looking at that those SuparCo connections. And there are also other contracts for civil monitoring or monitoring like a Department of Homeland Security applications with satellite. So we've identified this application called NADRA, N-A-D-R-A, that's again in the WikiLeaks and so forth, if you look up that. And that's for actually, we're talking a chip-based, biochip-based cell phones that are attached to you, and we know if you're making a cell phone call or not. If you give it to your friend, we know that that's not really where you are. So it's geolocating the people that are moving around with these phones. And then it's also biochip identity cards, so that if we would use the technology to hunt somebody down, basically to ping them down and find out what their location is, then we could make sure that they had their ID card with them, and we would know that that's them. So it's kind of this 1984 satellite Big Brother scenario, and whatever you want to call that satellite biochip world. where your phone and your identity card are biochip. This is the NADRA system. This is the NADRA system. Well, there's links we've identified between NADRA, this technology based in Pakistan, and this has got a lot of different Julian Assange links and WikiLeaks, based to a guy named Khatak, which is an Iranian guy here in Washington, D.C. Well, it turns out there's contacts between this Khatak and Imran Awad through these mortgage companies based in Falls Church, Virginia. Imran Awad's also got other terrorist ties, or maybe not potential terrorists. That maybe is not a potential terrorist tie, but that's a potential pay-to-play tie. But then he's also got ties to this terrorist, to a guy named Al Attar, who's a known operative with Hezbollah. So this could be selling the information in yet another direction toward terrorists, if you can believe this. He is an actual co-owner in Falls Church, Virginia, of a dealership, and this is the final cherry on the whole Sunday.
Oh, you're going to have to hold it.
Okay.
Don't talk about that yet, because that is one hell of a story.
Yes.
I want to come back to the congresswoman who headed up the Democratic Party operations. And the story now is about, you know, her ineptness as a leader. And the principal reason that the Democratic Party has gone downhill. because she's such an inept leader. When do you think, or do you think that that's just the beginning, or is that they're starting somewhere else and confining the subject there so as not to get anywhere close to her relationship to the Awans, the role that they might have played in U.S. politics and in U.S. elections? And that she might be also facilitating something with Imran Awan with respect to U.S. elections.
Yeah, I believe that she is facilitating something. I believe we've worked with Jared and Elizabeth Beck about the DNC lawsuit. We've interviewed them, and we've identified an ability or a company named Act Blue that was taking these donations for the DCCC and the DNC. And we've identified how these contributions were rerouted to a domain that looked very similar to Act Blue, but you just add an S to Act Blues. So even though it's very similar to a human, might not even see the difference between Act Blue and Act Blues, to a computer, that could be on the other side of the world. That could mean the money going on the other side of the world. And we believe there's strong indications that Imran Awan had the passwords, and that could have been the reason why money was moved from the Bernie-crats to the Hillocrats, as I call them. And we need to look into that more. As you know, the FBI didn't get a chance to look at those servers. Only an outside third party called CrowdStrike looked at that. So that's currently what the situation is at the DNC with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Situation with Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Congress as a congresswoman, yes, this is much bigger, I believe, than Debbie Wasserman Schultz, because we are talking about national, well, first of all, satellite technology for monitoring from space for not only business applications like oil finding, oil exploration, but also military applications as well as Department of Homeland Security type applications. It's way above her pay grade, I believe. And this is why I believe there is someone in the military-industrial complex that has put this system in place. We think we know where that's going to go, but we don't know yet from proof.
Well, George, this was quite an introduction. Usually it would take like several years to ferret out all the information we need to have about the points that you raised, but you've raised them, and I'm going to ask whether you would have the time to follow up, because there's much, much more to know. I don't know how your time is going and whether you could accommodate the request, but I would like to ask you back to finish the overview and take some questions. Would you be able to do that?
To come back on Utrice Lee's show? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I would be honored to do that.
You know, you've shed so
I'm
much
humbled.
Today.
I'm blushing. I'm blushing.
So we'll discuss how soon you can do it. I'm ready to go again at it tomorrow.
Let's do it. I think this will be a great lead-in for people, and tomorrow we can really get into the nitty-gritty.
All right. Nitty-gritty tomorrow, courtesy the generosity of George Webb. I really look forward to that. And to finish up some of the really, I mean, these are some very frightening discoveries, and I'm sure that somebody will pick up on it and take us a little deeper in Congress, at least, following up on some of the revelations here today. So thanks for being with us. And for those listening, you can see how extraordinary this story is. Stay tuned. Coming up next is, what's coming up next? We have a new program in that slot, and I forgot. Okay. Well, I forgot. Stay tuned. Coming up next, a brand new program that is great. Okay, I listened to it just last week. Truth to Power. That's the name of the program. Truth to Power. And it was, in fact, the motto of the newspaper that I used to edit, Speaking Truth to Power. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And I really, really want you to listen tomorrow. Tell your friends, tell everybody you know. And of course, the program is available. Today's program will be available on the archives. So thanks again. Thank you so much, George, for being with us from Crowdsource the Truth. And this is a special project he has undertaken with a couple of partners, very, very dogged journalists, including Jason Goodman. And I want to thank you all. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company, as always. See you tomorrow, same time. Bye-bye.